Welcome to the Minnesota House of Representatives Higher Education Finance and Policy Committee. Today, pursuant to House Rule 10.01, I call this remote meeting of the House Higher Education Finance and Policy Committee to order. The committee legislative assistant will take the role to determine which members are present. Ms. Schmaus?
Oh. Oh, can you hear me?
Now I can.
Okay, Chair Bernardi.
Present.
Vice Chair Christensen.
Present.
Representative O'Neill.
Present.
Representative Albright.
Present.
Representative Daniels.
Present.
Representative Erickson.
Present.
Representative Hansen.
Present.
Representative Heintzman.
Present.
Representative Howard.
Present.
Representative Keeler.
Present.
Representative Cleavorn.
Present.
Representative Kosnick.
Present.
Representative Kreshaw.
Present.
Representative Mason. Representative Meckland.
Present.
Representative Noor.
Present.
Representative Sandell. Representative Sandsted.
Present.
Excuse me, sorry, Sandell is present.
Okay. And Representative Thompson.
I believe the roll has been completed. Has anyone else joined us? Thank you very much, members. And I would like, okay, go ahead. You may say that, Representative Mason.
No, I'm present. If you took the roll, if that was what you were asking.
Yep, exactly. Thank you very much. May I have a motion to approve the minutes for February 2nd, 2021.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson moves approval of the minutes from February 2nd, 2021.
Thank you. Representative Erickson moves approval of the minutes for February 2nd, 2021. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes for February 2nd, 2021 are approved. Well, thank you for joining us today. We appreciate all of our testifiers being here and people tuning in. Our hearing today is going to be with the Minnesota Tribal Colleges. They will be giving introductions and an overview. And then we are also joined by the Interfaculty Organization and Minnesota State College faculty. And they will also be sharing an introduction and they will be sharing the overview of their legislative priorities. And we will be starting with presentations from each of our tribal colleges, followed by time for members to ask questions after all the tribal colleges have presented their testimony. We will we'll introduce each one separately as we begin to move forward. So we will be starting first with the president from Fond du Lac Tribal and Community College, Stephanie Hammett. And she is also joined by Anna Belagi, and we will be starting with President Hammett. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you. Bonjour, Gekinawiya, Stephanie, Neen, Ninish, Nikaz, Nagatuanang, Ishkunagani, Ndunjba. Hello, everyone. My name is Stephanie, and I'm from the Fond du Lac Reservation. Chair Bernardi and members of the House Committee. Thank you for inviting us today to speak about Fond du Lac Tribal and Community College. I was here presented a couple of years ago and was happy to be invited back. And today, as you said, I have Dr. Anafelagi here with me to help answer any questions as well. So I do have a PowerPoint, and we won't share it today in the interest of time, but so you will have copies of that and have some data and some discussion of our activities that we do on campus. Included in the PowerPoint is the college's mission statement, vision statement, and core values. Our core values of respect, integrity, stewardship, innovation, and compassion are included on many of our college documents, including course syllabi, brochures, and student activity event announcements. In fact, they are even written on our floor. We had a project completed last spring, and they are, and there's a terrazzo flooring installed, and the values are there, and they are a good reminder of how we should carry ourselves and do our daily work. So it's a beautiful addition to campus. We are unique in that we are the only tribal and state community college in the country. We're a member of the American Indian Higher Education Consortium and the Minnesota State Colleges System of Colleges and Universities. At times, our status can be like trying to fit a square peg into a round hole, as there's no one like us. But we wouldn't have it any other way. Our status provides us, and most importantly, our students, opportunities in both the state and tribal venues. We are accredited by both the Higher Learning Commission and the WINHEC World Indigenous Nations Higher Education Consortium. We hold land grant status and participate in the National Achieving the Dream program. We are also the only community college approved by the Minnesota Legislature to offer a 4-year baccalaureate degree. This degree in elementary ed will help increase the number of American Indian teachers in the state. Currently, there are only 0.5% American Indian teachers in the state of Minnesota, and we hope to change that. Last week, I watched a video of a young man. He was an eighth grader. He's from Fond du Lac Reservation, and he testified in front of committee and talked about how important it was that three of his elementary teachers were Ojibwe teachers. And he was very appreciative of that, and we hope by our program we will be able to influence other young students also. We are finally getting closer and closer to having that degree, getting things in order to be able to offer the degree. We're submitting reports to the Pelsby Board, and we'll have a site visit soon. Maybe, I don't know if Anna wants to elaborate on the program a little bit. That would be great.
Our elementary.
Okay. Oh, excuse me. Thank you and welcome to the committee, Ms. Felagi.
Felagin technically, but I respond.
Oh, Felagi, I was trying to get it right. So sorry. I needed more practice. Thank you for being in the committee and your understanding.
When I got my PhD, they pronounced it filigree. So you're doing a really good job.
Thank you.
So our elementary ed program, we are the only 2-year institution approved legislatively to offer a 4-year degree. We got that approval way back in 2003, and we took a few shots at it prior to really digging in beginning in 2014, 2015. And now we are to the point where we're creating our third and fourth year curriculum. We work closely with Winona State right now in a partnership. And our students get a 2-year degree here and then move into Winona State. In the last 3 years, we've had two graduating classes. in the bachelor's degree at Winona. And I believe that represents about 14 students. And last year, our six graduates of the six, two couldn't go right into the workforce for personal reasons. The other four were hired Johnny on the spot, really, upon graduation. And so we've got four new American Indian teachers in Minnesota. And that's what we really want to do in this program is increase teachers of color, particularly American Indian students. And I want to just make a point as well. We work with Winona State right now on the bachelor portion. We also work closely with Cloquet High School in our concurrent enrollment program. We offer, starting last year, unfortunately the pandemic hit, but starting last year, we began offering our foundations course in order to start building that pipeline all the way into the high school. The students can take that course in high school, have it count toward their degree here. And that's a really good thing for us. It really is important, we know, for students to see people in their classrooms that look like them, teachers who know them in a more intimate way, I think, in terms of context, social context in life. Here at Fond du Lac, about 25% of our faculty are American Indian. About 25% of our staff are American Indian. And so our students, in whatever program they're in here, learn that they can learn from Native people just as they would in any other classroom. And Native students get to see themselves in the front of the room. That affects not just our elementary ed students, but it affects all of our students positively in all of our critical workforce programming. We offer law enforcement, human services, nursing. And so our students have a very rich experience with folks who, from different walks of life. We think that they walk out of here with a little leg up in the area of diversity and equity as they go into their workforces. So that's my little spiel on the elementary ed and increasing teachers of color.
Thank you, Chair. Through our partnership with Achieving the Dream and Project Success, we have developed some important student success goals. Those include increasing the term GPAs of our students, the completion rate, and fall-to-fall retention rates, particularly of American Indian students, but also first-year students, housing residents, and student athletes by 2.5% each year. To assist us in reaching those goals, we've developed online orientation module. We're in the midst of reviewing, redesigning our advising processes and working toward implementing a platform we've branded as North Star. And that will allow students, staff, and faculty to seamlessly communicate with each other and promote student success. We've also developed a co-requisite model for English and math. Most often, a lot of our students save those classes for toward the end of their program here, and we're hoping that this English has already proven to be a success, but the math model has just started. And if I could ask Dr. Felagi to add at this point about those.
Great.
Dr. Felagi.
So at Fond du Lac, I think 3 years ago, we implemented a co-requisite model as an approach to working perhaps more effectively with students who come in needing developmental education. Tried many different things at Fond du Lac. The co-rec model, what that means is the student actually enrolls in the college level English course or college level math course right away. And those who place into a developmental, have a need for skill building, they take an additional 50-minute lab type of skill building lab, as well as that college level course. So essentially what we wanted to get rid of are standalone developmental courses where students kind of languish and they don't get, some don't get to actually their college level courses. It's a hard model. It's a hard teaching model. And it's in the, it's kind of expensive to a degree the way we run it. But in English, we've gone from a 30% in the past, our students who placed in developmental English, about 30% of them went on to complete a college level English course, right? Very low. In the COREC model between 2017 and 2019, that percentage has raised to 83%. Which is really a substantial improvement for us. And as a result of that, now we're practicing that in with our introduction to statistics course. And we have a stats prep course that is adjoined to that. So, so far, even though we're doing it kind of under duress and remote delivery, it does appear to be successful. We don't have any figures on that right now, though.
Thank you, President Hammett. Would you like to wrap it up?
Yep. Our work by all our faculty and staff has shown some great initial results. We've increased Native American first-time college student retention by 16.8%. From fall 19 to fall 20, and that's over the fall 2018 cohort. So we're at 53.6% now, and we think that's great, but we do know that there's more work to be done. We know there are some challenges that we currently face, and developing ways to increase enrollment, reimagining how our course delivery will look after COVID, and continuing to implement strategies and protocols to maintain safety and health of our college community. I have no doubt that we can meet these challenges. Our faculty and staff have proven time and again how resilient and truly adaptable they are. It is a pleasure coming to work every day, and I can't wait until we can all come back to campus and welcome our students and bring the building back to life. We have a beautiful campus, and I miss all the activity. So I think we're all looking forward to that. And I also just want to say thank you to Dr. Felagy, and thank you to the chair and the rest of the committee members for allowing this time to talk about the place we love. Thank you.
Me glitch. Now we will move on to President of Leech Lake Tribal College, President Raymond Burns.
Good afternoon. I'd like to thank the committee for the opportunity to speak today. It's an honor to be asked to speak. And really what I just want to talk about in terms of Leech Lake Tribal College and tribal colleges overall is that we do represent an opportunity for students who are traditionally underrepresented in higher education. And it's really important to recognize that many of our students would not be in college at all if they were not at tribal colleges. Even for us who are located in 20 miles from Bemidji State University, many of our students would not make that 20-mile trip to go to Bemidji State for various reasons. But once they do go to our college, then they will make that 20-mile trip to Bemidji State to look for their bachelor's degree. And that's something that's also really important. Something that statistics are showing is that tribal college students who graduate with a two-year degree are much more successful at the four-year level than they are if they just went straight into the two-year or straight into a four-year program. Leech Lake is a Tribal College is a small college. We have about 150 students, although with the pandemic, that number has gone down. There's no doubt about that. And we are struggling to meet our student goals just because of that. But in a way, it is also showing our strength as an institution in that we are able to reach out to our students on a much more personal level to find out what their specific needs and to answer those needs as quickly as possible. The majority of our programs are designed to work directly with students. It's one of those things where we're never going to match dollar for dollar what we can provide for our students, but we can exceed what other colleges do by having that personal connection with our students. And that goes from me on down. When the doors were open and people were allowed in, my door was always open, and students could come in and talk to me at any time. And they knew that, they understood that, and that extends throughout the entire campus, is that we knew our students were important. Now, one of the things that's really important to know about tribal colleges is, even though we are tribal colleges, we are open to all students, regardless of their ethnicity. Leech Lake Tribal College is, yes, it's 85% Native American, but 15% non-Native students attend Leech Lake Tribal College as well. And of those 85%, only about 60% are from Leech Lake. So the other 40% come from tribes throughout the state of Minnesota. So we're not just, you know, a tribal college is kind of a misnomer in that we don't specifically work just for tribes. We work with the community that the tribes happen to be located in. And there are a lot of non-Native members in that community. But what that means, because we don't get a lot of state support, we don't get a lot of financial compensation for the fact that we have 150 students on campus, you know, that are all taxpaying students. So, you know, we traditionally don't get a lot of support from the state of Minnesota. We rely on our federal funds. And this is something that hampers us a lot. We would love to offer more services and more opportunities for our students, but we just don't have the financial resources to do so. And, you know, it's not something, we're not asking for something extra. We're just asking for the same thing other colleges get. Aside from that, I just want to emphasize that we are a fully accredited institution. Our credits transfer across the board. In fact, we do have several articulation agreements with Bemidji State University. In fact, now we just work to deal with the Minnesota state system. So our articulation agreements are across the entire state system. So any of our students who attend Leech Lake can then transfer to any other institution in the Minnesota state system with those articulation agreements. And as I said, the statistics are showing that those students who get a two-year degree at a tribal college and then transfer to a four-year college succeed at a much higher rate than those students who start at the four-year institution. Our business program, which transfers directly to Bemidji State University, is our biggest academic program. And we have two trades programs. One is our law enforcement program, which has been very successful in that we do have a lot of law enforcement officers and peace officers who have trained in our community, now out on patrol, out in the workforce, which is really bringing a lot of some of the tensions that you see in other communities between law enforcement and communities of color. Those tensions are a little bit lessened because they've had that opportunity to work on the reservation and see reservation communities. And then our other program is our building trades program. And we're really excited about that because we applied for and received a grant through the American Indian College Fund to expand our program by building a new facility for them that is more COVID ready. Right now, the facility we have for building trades, we just couldn't teach the number of students we wanted to because they were too close together, too proximate. And now with this new building, we'll be able to expand that and offer trades to trades certificates to a whole group of students that heretofore we didn't reach. And we're also streamlining some of our trades programs and going for what are called micro-credentialing, which allows students to go through an accelerated 6-month program to get certificatures, which allows them to be job ready the moment they graduate. And one of the things that we know is going to happen when this pandemic finally subsides is that there's going to be a lot of job opportunities out there and a lot of people looking for jobs. So we want to really give our students that opportunity to push forward and take advantage of those opportunities. I just want to conclude by saying, as tribal colleges, our goal is to get to provide higher education to those students who heretofore may not have been able to take advantage of that. And all we're asking for is just to be dealt with equitably as with other institutions. And with that, I thank you for your time and I turn it back to the chair. Thank you.
Great. We now will be moving on to the president of Red Lake Nation College, President Dan King. Welcome to our committee.
Ojo, thanks for having me. I'm going to share my screen here. Are you guys able to see that?
Not yet.
Not yet? Okay.
Mr. Herring, would you be able? Oh, there you go.
There, is it popping up there?
Getting closer. There you go.
How's that?
Perfect. Thank you. Okay. Oh, beautiful.
Alrighty. Yeah, I'm gonna give you guys the executive version of this, right? So we'll keep it real short. But I just wanted to say bonjour to everyone and thank you for having us here at the committee. And this was really a lot of firsts for the tribal colleges, because this is, I think, the first time I've been to this committee. Let me turn my phone and make sure. First time we've been to this, I've been to this committee. The governor, lieutenant governor, has been up. Commissioner Olson has made several visits up to our colleges. First time we ever got state funding was this year, last year in 2020. We each got $100,000 from the state. So there's just been a lot of firsts. So we appreciate this invite and the opportunity to start some dialogue. That was our beautiful campus. I'll give you the quick overview of what we're going to be talking about. That's our mission there of what we're trying to do, basically to provide some higher education and also instill our language and culture so our students have a good idea of who they are as they go into the world. So that's kind of our mission, is to provide that culture and language-based education with liberal arts. We're a two-year school at Red Lake Nation College. You know, we're not like the most communities in the country where you might have 4 to 7 different higher education options. On the reservations, we have one option, and that's Red Lake Nation College. So if we weren't here, like Ray said it very eloquently, most of our students wouldn't be in school. We did a market study in 2010 to see, we were looking at building a new campus. So we did a study and we found that in the US, the average 4-year attainment at that point was 30% approximately in 2010 for the whole country. In Red Lake Nation, it was 1.5%. 4-year attainment. So we don't have an education gap. We have an education candidate that we have to fill. So we have a big challenge in front of us. And so what we're trying to do is to get our students. Are you getting a little feedback there? Oh, there we go. So what we're trying to do is to get our students to not just get a 2-year degree, even though we're a 2-year school, but we want them to go out, get a 2-year transfer to BSU, other schools, and then come and maybe get a master's, a PhD, or become a doctor, a lawyer. That's what we're trying to do. So, and we look at our schools as really too important to fail. We're really a family college. And it's just like the state of Minnesota would never let the University of Minnesota fail, right? No matter what tough times, what pandemic or whatever. We can't let our tribal colleges fail because of this access issue where we're the only school there. And the way I look at it is what we're doing is educational sovereignty. The best thing about our tribes is that we're sovereign nations and we can control our own destiny. One of the best examples of that is our tribal colleges. So we're serving this unique market niche that nobody else is serving. Nobody else is doing this, what the tribes are doing. And that's what led to the creation of the tribal colleges in the 1970s, because our members were having these horrendous completion rates of like 1% compared to the country at 30%. So, and we don't have a 10-year plan. You know, they ask us this in our accreditation. We have a 100-year plan. We're planning for 7 generations. So we've invested a lot to make our tribal college successful. And here's just some of our success. We're on February 24th, we're looking to get our full accreditation from the Higher Learning Commission. We've been working on this for 10 years, the last 10 years. We started in 2001, and we have a new 21st century. That picture you saw was the front of our campus. So $11.4 million campus. All of our instructors have PhDs or master's degrees. We're in candidacy status right now. We will be getting full accreditation on the 24th. We had a perfect score on our accreditation report, which is very rare for any school. So we do meet all the Minnesota higher ed, financial aid, federal reporting requirements. We have to meet every requirement that every other college has to meet. We have the articulation agreements, like Ray mentioned. We had about 160 students in the fall of 2019. Of course, that's down quite a bit now because of COVID. And we've had over 300 graduates since we started. So just think about that for a small community. That's a lot of graduates for our small community. One of our success stories is one of our graduates, Liz Barrett. She started at our school and transferred to Dartmouth, where she's a pre-med student. So these are the kind of success stories that we have at our tribal colleges. We think our students can compete anywhere if given that same opportunity. But the biggest threat to us is limited and reduced federal funding and reduced grants. You know, we are kind of rural based, our tribal colleges. Like, just take a look at the 3 reservations up north. That's 71% of the natives just from Red Lake, Leech Lake, and White Earth. So that's about, you know, 40,000 of the 56,000 natives. So that's a lot of people up here in northern Minnesota. As far as partnerships, we currently have articulation agreements with BSU, University of Minnesota Crookston, Fond du Lac, White Earth here at Red Lake. And so our goal is to make ease of transfer for our students into the entire U of M and the state system. So we kind of worked out our curriculum to match up with the state system, the MNSQ. So it's a good relationship we have with BSU and the other schools. And our goal, just to close those education gaps. Like Ray kind of touched on, you know, we feel it is a funding injustice and inequity. You know, you look at trying to, how do we close these education gaps and these social injustices? Well, the Minnesota State Constitution says that no people shall be discriminated against based on race, but that yet we have where non-native students in Minnesota who come to tribal colleges, they actually get funding from the state. But if a native student, like our native students on the res, we're about 95% native, we don't get any funding from the state. So, I mean, that's a really, it's almost hard to believe that that's even legal, because if a non-native student comes to a tribal college, then the state says, yes, we'll fund those. Yeah, no problem. But our native students who are actually, we pay all, you know, the same taxes as everyone else does. That's a big misconception that natives don't pay taxes. We pay all the sales tax, federal income tax, all the same taxes. The only taxes we don't pay is we don't pay the licenses for cars when we have our plates through our reservations. And if you're a native who lives on and works on the reservation, then you don't pay state income tax. Other than that, we pay all the regular taxes. So just think about it. What if your school that you attended or worked at or your child goes to, what if they didn't receive any state dollars? How could they survive? We do that. We survive with no state funding. We got $100,000 in 2020, and we're very grateful. That was the first time. But we're always underfunded from the federal government. So that's always a challenge. And the first thing to get cut usually is tribal colleges. So we're always in a constant battle to survive every year. So it would be great, like Ray suggested, is to have some kind of normal funding, operational funding that we would get every year, just like every other school in the state. Since our all of our tribal members are dual citizens, we're members or and we're citizens of the U.S. and our state that we live in, and then we're citizens of our tribe, whatever tribe we're from. So every Native has dual citizenship. So it's a very unique legal situation that we're all in, and it really is kind of amazing to me that we don't get any state funding. So in our colleges really suffer as a result of that. So as far as our tribal colleges, we are, like Ray mentioned, open to the public, you know, but we don't get the funding. And we do rely on the higher ed services of our reservations. And we do serve that unique niche in the in our areas. So I just wanted to conclude with we look forward to working with you folks, and we hope to be talking to you and have a further dialogue. So Miigwech for having us today. Thank you.
Miigwech. When the next presenter we will have today is the president of White Earth Tribal and Community College, President Lorna Legault. Welcome to our committee.
Hi, everyone. Bonjour. Thank you so much for inviting us. We're excited to be here and join you today. So I want to tell you a little bit about the White Earth Tribal and Community College. So we are located on the White Earth Reservation in Manoomin, where the reservation is home to about 18,000 tribal members who are really spread out throughout the entire world. Our reservation is prairie in the west, rolling hills with many lakes and rivers in the middle, and forest on the east. We're so rural up here that we have one stoplight on our whole reservation, and it doesn't even change. It just blinks. It goes caution one way and stop on the other way. So very rural area that we're in. So just to give you a little better idea of our area, we're 65 miles east of Moorhead, 60 miles west of Bemidji, and 225 miles northwest of the metro. As you can see, our college, our location, our college is filling a void in this rural area. Although we have seven K-12 school systems serving our reservation, we have one post-secondary, and that's us, the White Earth Tribal and Community College. So our college was founded in 1997, and as you heard from the other presidents, we're all so rooted in our Anishinaabe culture. The college was founded to provide educational opportunities that were not available in the community. But our programming is really not just about getting a degree. It's also about keeping our traditions, our language, and our culture alive. Our college, as well as the other tribal colleges, is deeply rooted in our Anishinaabe culture. Many students, even today, growing up on the reservation, still don't have the opportunity to learn about their culture or history from a Native perspective. So after 1997, we spent 20 years occupying various buildings throughout the big town of Manoomin. Manoomin has a population of about 1,200 people, so it's the largest town on the reservation. In 2016, we finally had the opportunity to move to one campus. So this is just a nice summer picture of our campus up here in Manoomin. We are a 1994 land grant institution. We have an extension program that provides community education. Their focus right now is on food sustainability. We are accredited by the Higher Learning Commission, and we're governed by a 9-member Council of Trustees. We're a 2-year institution offering the AA degree in a variety of learning options, including day classes, evening classes, PSEO options, online, hybrid, high flex. We try to provide as many opportunities as we can to the community. As you heard from the other colleges, we're small. We have about 145 students at the White Earth Tribal and Community College. About 70% of them are full-time. The typical White Earth Tribal and Community College student, though, we have 41% that are over the age of 25. And the average age of a student attending our college is actually 34. It varies every semester, but 60 to 70% of our student population is female, many with children, many who are working, and many who have children and are working at the same time as they're trying to attend college. 85% of our students are Native American. 81% of them are Pell Grant eligible. And 60% of the students coming to our college are first generation college students. So you can see that the student body at our college is much different than a stereotypical college. In one hand, we feel very fortunate that we're not really worrying about young students out partying all the time or anything like that. Instead, we're working with the adults who are really, really trying to better their lives. So, again, thank you so much for the opportunity to be here with you today. I heard the other presidents kind of mention this too. So just kind of dispelling some myths that we find a lot of time with our tribal colleges. We do have open enrollment. We serve everyone in the community. Tribal members and non-members alike are welcome to attend. Our classes meet and exceed the quality standards. We have the exact same HLC criterion to follow for accreditation as any other university. Some of the benefits of our college, again, going back to the map that you've seen earlier, we're serving a huge unmet need in rural Minnesota. Distance is such a barrier for our area, which is plagued with high poverty as well. The education disparities are real. We see them all the time here. Our colleges as a whole are probably the lowest tuition rates in the entire state. At White Earth, we don't offer student loans. If a student does come to us and is self-pay, we work with them one-on-one to make a realistic payment plan for them. Our tribe does supplement us in funding in order to help better serve our community. But as with everyone everywhere, COVID has impacted all of us so much that our tribal supplemental funding is at risk right now. Our credits are aligned with the Minnesota transfer curriculum to ensure that our students have a smooth transition to other Minnesota colleges. We're really too small of a school to consider becoming a 4-year university, so we see our role as providing students a good start to prepare them to continue on at another university or institution close by. Our campus is small, our classes are small, but that's really what helps us foster the family atmosphere that we have. Our college is really a community college, and it becomes just like home to our students. We have the opportunity to get to know all of them very well. And with such a small staff, we're all used to doing whatever it takes to be sure everything gets done. So if our cook is out one day, it's not uncommon for me to go out into the drum hall and see one of the directors working in the kitchen to make sure that the students have their noon lunch. We just do whatever it takes and we make it work. So what we have going on up here in Minnoman, we just finished a new strategic plan. We're excited about getting that rolling. We're going to be shifting our focus a little bit to workforce development, so we'll be looking at some more short-term programming with certificate programs and diploma programs in addition to the AA that we currently offer. We have been working on partnering with the area institutions. You heard the articulation agreements mentioned earlier. We just recently, all of our colleges just recently did 7 new articulation agreements with MnState institutions. So we're very pleased to have that. That helps ensure that our students can have a smooth transfer over. Current challenges, COVID, like everyone. I think we've adjusted pretty good now. But back in March, when the pandemic first started, we definitely had huge struggles. We needed to rely on technology in order to continue delivering classes. But up in this area, we were challenged because not only did so many of our students not even have computers, they didn't have computers because they didn't have internet at home. So those struggles are real, and there's so many students, you know, when I talk about our college and our student body, there's so many of our students that are really just one alternator away from dropping out of school. So when COVID struck it, I'm very proud of the staff and the faculty that we have at White Earth. They just jumped in, and, you know, even though we were all personally affected by this, they jumped in to do the best that they could to make sure our students could get through the semesters. In closing, again, I just really want to thank you all for being here, taking the time to learn more about our tribal colleges. At any time, we welcome you to come and visit us and see our campuses, see our students. We hope to be back into in-person our new normal here soon. Going forward, I just hope that we can continue to maintain a good working relationship. I'm a strong advocate for working together to better serve our communities, no matter how big or small they are. And I think our tribal colleges have a lot of opportunities that working together, we can make some really good things happen for everyone in Minnesota. So again, thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much to all of our presidents today, and Dr. And I also want to thank all the staff at the colleges and the students for their leadership and their tenacity and persistence and getting through their coursework and working towards their goals and their dreams and their credentials. And so I want to thank all of them and all of you for being here today. And thank you for the invitation to visit. I want to open questions to members. The first question goes to Representative Erickson. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to all the presenters. You know, it's really so exciting to know that within our reservation communities, there's a real new surge for education for our young American Indian, whether they're, you know, graduates from high school or they are older. That's so exciting because it means that, you know, you're going to, all of them are going to move into the work world and find out how great it is, you know, to be productive and have a job and help each other. And I think the success is partly because your communities. The only one college of the four that I visited is Fond du Lac, which is a very beautiful campus. I must say I've been there a couple of times and it is really, really beautiful. But my question is, to what extent does the Bureau of Indian Education help any of your institutions?
And who would like to answer that question? Oh, let's see. I am opening up my screen so I can see more people on here. Okay. What I will ask is whoever wants to take their mute off that are of our presidents, I can hopefully eventually see them. And Ms. Mouse, if you can help me as well see Mr. Herring.
President Burns is his hand up.
Okay, President Burns, thank you very much.
We do receive funding through Bureau of Indian Education. However, we have never received the amount of funding that has been allocated for us. We are, when this mandate was given to Congress, it was the amount per student we were supposed to get was $8,000 per student, and we have never been allocated that amount of funding. And the way it's set up is that there's a pot of funding that is provided for all tribal colleges, and then it's divided by each number of student in the tribal college. So the more successful we are in bringing students onto campus, the less amount of money we get, because there's the pot of pie is the same, but the more numbers. And so so we do get funding, but it's compared to other funding that other institutions get, it's obviously adequate because we can do it, but we have to pinch pennies, and we have to really become very inventive in how we spend our money.
Madam Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, thank you for being innovative. I can tell that you are. When I listen to White Earth talk about, everybody pitches in the kitchen or wherever it is, that's a real sense of community. And so that's so good to hear, because it really tells me, and I think all of us, that you're working together, probably on not very much funding. But do you receive anything through your casinos? Dr. Burns,
President King, I saw your mute come off. Did you want to answer that question?
Yeah, well, like up here, we're in a rural area, so that's kind of a misconception as well about casinos, because we have, like, our tribe has 3 casinos, but we're in very rural areas with very low population centers. So we're not like Mystic Lake or Treasure Island or anything, where they basically provide like police, their basic public services is that's where pretty much all the funding goes to. So, we do have casinos, but they provide very little in the form of direct payments to the tribal colleges. And one more thing I did want to touch on, you made a good point about the young people and helping everybody. And Lorna mentioned that, like, all of our schools, we're all about average age of 29 to 30, very similar. All the numbers and statistics she gave you pretty much applies to all of us, but we are seeing more and more younger people right out of high school. And before COVID hit, we had 40 students from our high school in Red Lake in the PSEO program, and more and more 10th graders. And I love that PSEO program. So I think that is a key for the future, to get where our students graduate from high school and they think automatically, I'm going to college. It's like for your family, for example, and a lot of, traditional families, that's what you think, right? You go to high school and then, where am I going to college? Or where am I going to go to further training or education? That's not the case in Indian country still. And like me, same in my family. I was first generation college student. I had 4 older brothers and sisters, and yet I was the first to graduate from high school. And then I was fortunate enough to go on to St. Thomas, and then eventually to Harvard to get a master's degree. But my high school counselor told me I should go to the local VOTEC for painting. They said I couldn't go to college, that I didn't have the potential. So that's kind of what we're overcoming in a lot of our communities, is not only the systemic, racism, and where we're told we can't do things. So we have to rise above that and make it happen for ourselves. And that's where the tribal colleges come in, where we're really like hope centers, and we build people up and we build up their confidence, their academic skills, so that at the end of those 2 years, they think, hey, I could go down to BSU. Maybe I could get a 4-year degree. Maybe I could get a master's. And so we start that. We light that spark in the students. So that's why we're so important to our communities.
Madam Chair.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Erickson, we'll have you proceed with your question, and then we'll go on after that to the other six members who would like to ask questions.
Well, I was just going to mention to Dr. I was just thanking Madam Chair. I was going to mention to Dr. King and the others that it was former Senator Jen Olson and I who added the 10th grade to the PSEO. So I'm so glad to hear that. And now I'm offering a bill that would add ninth graders to career and technical, because I know that at a young age, if there's no program, whether it's in your high schools or even in your community colleges, that's not going to make them make our younger students be motivated to move ahead. That if we can get some of those ninth graders who really have a talent, you know, whatever it might be in for a career in technical, I'm hoping that I can move that bill this year, because I think there are enough ninth graders out there, and certainly in your communities, where they could be motivated to get into one of your programs in the community college that will give them a leg up, and it'll make it so exciting for them. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, members, we have five more members who have questions, and we'll move on to, before we move to this next segment, and we have Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Pidamae Chimigwich, I love any presentation that has language in it. As an enrolled member of the Yankton Sioux Tribe, which is the Ihumpawan Nation and lineage to East of Shoshone, you know, representation matters. And seeing you all here and hearing the stories, I worked in Indian education for a very long time, and higher ed recruitment for multicultural recruitment. And so the role that y'all play in the state is far overlooked. And I just really want to acknowledge the work that you do and the intertwined culture, and that matters. And we see kids come out and be so successful and feel like they were valued in education and go on to be and do bigger things. I have two questions for you, and anybody can answer. I know that our Minnesota Indian scholarship is only eligible for students who are going to accredited colleges. Do you feel like your students take advantage of that? And is that one of the big benefits that our state is offering? Maybe if one of you can answer that, and then I just have one follow-up question.
Okay, so it looks like President Legault has her mute button off, and so I'm going to call on you for responding to that question. Thank you.
Exactly correct. Our students, because we are accredited institutions, our students are eligible for the Minnesota Indian Scholarship programs as well. Yes, they are. And it's very helpful. They're very appreciative. It helps them get through and get by because, as I said in my presentation, so many of them are one alternator away from dropping out of school. And without those funds to help get them through, they wouldn't be able to do it. So yeah, that is a scholarship program that our students receive, definitely.
Yeah, that's huge.
Okay, President King.
Yeah, that's huge at our school too. And yeah, the Minnesota Indian Scholarship is one of the biggest programs that supports our students and keeps them in school. And I think Minnesota has one of the best support programs for students, direct student aid, I think, in the country. We're right up there. This is an excellent program that we have here in Minnesota. And what we were talking about earlier is the support for the schools, like operational funding. As far as the direct-to-student aid, that is awesome. And that really helps our students stay in school. And it helps us a little bit indirectly, but it would be great to have some direct funding as well. Miigwech.
Representative Keeler.
Yep. So I just didn't want to pass up this opportunity to not talk about that, because I think in this setting, we need to make sure that we see how valuable that program is. So I appreciate you all bringing that to light. So I am authoring the bill to increase Teachers of Color and Indigenous Act. And I know that Fond du Lac does an amazing job with our teachers. We talk about how important it is to have teachers who look like us. I went all the way from kindergarten to my master's program, never had a Native American student the whole entire time. And so I know how important that is. But what other options or what other programs do you have when students leave your tribal schools, they go out and they earn a bachelor's or master's? What kind of economic development opportunities are you seeing on your reservations to bring those students back, whether they're lawyers, professors, higher educated individuals? How are we creating that cycle of economic development back on our reservation?
I'll take it.
President Lagu, if you'd like to take that and go ahead.
So very good question. Exactly what you're talking about is one of the biggest challenges that we have up in Manoomin up here. We're not able to recruit qualified people, and it doesn't matter if it's at our tribal government or our college or even our casino as far as that goes. We are struggling to get qualified instructors because, of course, we have to meet the accreditation guidelines. They have to have a master's degree or a PhD in their field that they're teaching. We comply with that. We honor that. But up here, it's hard to recruit one. So we're so limited on what we can do because we have to be able to meet the qualifications that are required in any class that we teach. So we can't just offer a class not knowing we're going to have a teacher. And then if we're lucky enough to get one, they can't find a place to live up here. So it's a huge challenge. That's one of our biggest challenges right now is finding qualified staff to come onto the reservation.
Representative Keeler.
I don't have any more questions. I just, again, want to share my appreciation because I know how difficult it is. And I see the amazing work that you've done. And when y'all open back up, I will definitely be coming back out to revisit with all of you.
Thank you. Next is Representative Cleavorn, and then we have Representative Mason and O'Neill, then Undeck. Representative Cleavorn.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi, but I have to say Representative Keeler made many of the comments that I wanted to make, and she asked the questions I wanted to ask. So I would just echo her thanks for being here and for sharing the great work that you're doing for our students all across Minnesota. So thank you very much, and I do agree that that language component is huge. So thank you.
Representative Mason.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Some of my questions have been answered, but maybe somebody could clarify. Originally, I thought one of the speakers was saying that they weren't getting money from the state of Minnesota. And then Representative Erickson asked some questions about maybe extra funding that I'm thinking maybe that might have made the difference. But for the extra funding that you are seeking, where do you want it to come from, and why do you think you're not getting the same treatment as the other educational facilities in our state?
President Hammett, you have not. Did you want to tackle that one? Or I don't want to put you on the spot, but I'm going to give you the first opportunity to answer that one.
Right. I actually think this was a comment that President King had brought up. At Fond du Lac, we're tribal, but we do not, like the other three, we do not receive BIE funding. We receive the state funding through regular allocation like the other Minn State colleges and universities. So our funding is different than the other three. And so I don't want to speak for President King. I'd like him to address that
thank you. Question. Thank you. President King.
Yeah, I could comment on that. Yeah, and for us, it's really more of operational funding like the other schools get, like the University of Minnesota system and the state schools, where they just get regular allocations every year to operate as a school. You know, so that's kind of what we were talking about is some kind of funding like that, because we did get $100,000 this year for the first time ever, I think, that the college has got operational funding like that. So we're very grateful. We're going, wow, that's never happened before. You know, and we had talked about it, though, with the Commissioner Olson and with the Lieutenant Governor and the Governor. So it was something that was brought up and it happened for the first time ever. So we're very appreciative of that, but some type of regular funding. And the reason I think it doesn't happen or it hasn't in the past is because the state kind of looks at the tribal colleges like, well, they're tribal colleges, they're covered by the feds, or the feds are taking care of them, they're fine. you know, they have federal funding, but since we have it so difficult on the federal level, and we have to go there a couple times a year, and we're always the first one on the chopping block, so it's a constant battle, you know, just for basic survival. So that's why we were saying it, you know, would be great to have, you know, some type of a regular, you know, state funding, just like every other school in the state, because our students, after all, you know, are state citizens. Miigwech.
Thank you. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to say that this entire presentation has been incredibly hopeful. So the reason I say that is because I grew up, as my committee knows, in Bagley. And so literally in your backyard, and went to Bemidji State, got my undergrad there. So I stayed near home. My church was in Bemidji. A lot of my shopping was in Bemidji. And as you all know, but maybe the committee doesn't, so Manoman and Clearwater County are the first and second poorest counties in the state, and historically have been. So it is incredibly rural. It is incredibly poor. And I grew up right in the middle of that. I had maybe about a third of my classmates were Native. And so I just thought that was, you know, just how everybody grew up, and come to realize that that was a pretty unique experience growing up in Clearwater County, graduating from Bagley High School, and having that experience. So I just am just filled with so much hope, because I know how hard it is up there. And I know how hard, particularly my Native classmates had it, and those that stayed on White Earth or Red Lake, it was even more difficult. And so you just filled me with so much hope. I do have a question. I do want to come and tour, because when I go back home to Bemidji and see family, I would love to just take a quick trip over and see all of this. It's so exciting. I left in 92. And so some of this has happened, you know, after I left the state. So I graduated in 92 and I left the state that summer for the state of Virginia. I got my master's there. So I didn't even know some of this was there. And I feel terrible that I didn't even realize that. But my question is, you had talked about how low your tuition is. And so just so that I get a sense as to what those numbers are, if you happen to know either your per credit or like the year's worth of tuition, if you could just, if someone could let us know kind of what number that is, that kind of helps me put it in perspective. And again, thank you for what you're doing.
President Burns, would you like to answer that question?
Yes, our tuition is, and I'm confused on this right now, because we were actually going to bump our tuition up $5, but then COVID hit, so we canceled that. But our tuition is $140 per credit.
Yeah, ours is $159 per credit and about $4,200 a year with all the fees and everything. So that's about, I think we're about 30 to 40% of BSUs. And then so a lot of our students transfer there. And like President Legault mentioned, we don't offer any student loans because we don't want our students to. So we provide that with financial aid for our students, so they don't have to take out any loans their first 2 years. Once they transfer to state school system or other places, then they have to get loans. And we have several of our students now that have gone down to Augsburg. And so we're very proud of our students. They're going to the University of Minnesota, to Morris, Duluth, the Twin Cities. So they're going all over the place. And it's very hopeful for us too. So we appreciate those comments. And yeah, we all welcome you to come up and take a tour anytime. Miigwech.
Thank you, President King. Representative O'Neill, did you have a follow-up?
No, Madam Chair, I just am in awe. And it's just so hopeful. I just think this was one of the best presentations that we've had so far.
And then our last question for this segment is Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Presidents. Are you able to recruit and attract Native students from the metropolitan area? And if not, are those young men and women served as you're able to offer services up north down here?
Yeah, that's a really good question.
President King.
Yeah, there are about 45 to 50,000 at least Natives down there that aren't being served by any tribal college. And we have our tribe alone has about 8,000 members down there. And I know the other tribes have more than that. So it would be great to be able to offer some kind of, and we're actually at that point now that we're getting our full accreditation, where we're looking to try to serve our members down there, where they always are asking us, hey, it's great, we have a tribal college for our reservation, but that doesn't do anything for us down here. And we would also like to have a culture-based education. So that's our next step now. So we are looking to work with Chancellor Malhotra. We actually talked about that at our last meeting, and that's one of the next steps. We're working with them to come up with a solution to serve our tribal members in the Twin Cities.
Me. President Burns, did you have your mute off? Did you want me to call on you? I was taking the cue. I hope I took it well.
Yes, thank you. Just to kind of follow up on that, one of the bonuses, I hate to use that word, but one of the things that we've learned with the pandemic now is that we can do online education. So that opens up doors that we haven't really had before with our urban population. So that's, and that, and as President King said, working with the Minnesota state system, that opportunity is there. And it's something we're definitely going to start exploring. I know it's, you know, one of the hesitancies has always been that we can't really afford to move into the cities because we just don't have that monetary infrastructure to get there. Now, if we, with online classes, we are a lot more positive that we can do this. So I think probably in the next 2-3 years, we will start making inroads into the urban populations as well.
President Hammett, did you have comment to add on this?
I did. Most of our students come probably within a 60-mile radius of our campus. And so we do get a few from the metro area, but even though we're maybe be a little bit larger area than the other three tribal college locations, there are not enough places for those students to live that want to travel here or come here. There's difficulty with that. And so I think it would be excellent if we could offer some classes and serve those students in the metro area. They deserve that as well.
Thank you very much. And I'm also thinking, even not just in the metro area, but other parts of the state as well. My grandchildren are part of the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe. And I, you know, there's not a tribal college right around their area as I looked on, when I looked on the map when we were sharing that. So I want to thank you very, very much for being here today. I can tell by the questions and our members' interest and the questions that we had, that people were very, very grateful that you were here today. And I want to wish you all the best and thank you for your leadership and wish all the best to the students. And I look forward to our continued relationship and partnership and look forward to the continued discussion. Thank you very much.
Thank you all. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now we are going to move on to our next presenters, and we will have a brief introduction and presentation from each of our Minnesota State College faculty organizations. First up, we will hear from Jonathan Bone, who will be giving us an introduction and overview of the interfaculty organization. Welcome to our committee, Mr. Bone. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi. I'd actually like to turn it over to our president, Brent Jeffers, who's on the call as well, and have him start.
Well, thank you. Welcome, President Jeffers. You may proceed.
Chair Bernardi, committee members, my name is Brent Jeffers. I'm president of the Interfaculty Organization. Good afternoon, and thank you for this invitation and this opportunity to talk about the IFO. But Madam Chair, if I could, I would just like to share that you provided me another gift today, and the opportunity to listen to our colleagues at the tribal colleges talk about the value of education and the work that they're doing to deliver an opportunity to students. And one of the things that's been absent in this era of COVID is the opportunity to sit around with people committed to education, and that includes members of this committee. We will continue to welcome those students from our tribal colleagues, and we'll continue to work hard to welcome their culture as well. But that was a treat to listen to the commitment these folks have to educating students. So thank you for that as well. I'm an elected position. If I were not in this position, I would be in the middle of my 32nd year as a professor at Southwest Minnesota State out in Marshall. And I have had great opportunities and experiences over those three decades working with our students in the southwest corner of the state. The IFO represents about 4,000 faculty, coaches, and counselors at the seven state universities. We've been around since the 1930s when a group of faculty got together at that time from the six teacher colleges in the state, and they began to discuss issues pertinent to higher education. They also worked with legislatures for funding. We've gone on to work with the various governing bodies of our institutions, and we've been able to deliver in that collaborative effort with our legislator, our governing bodies, to deliver a quality, accessible, and affordable education in Minnesota. In 1975, the IFO became the official bargaining unit of the faculty at the seven state universities. Unlike other state employees, the unions that represent the faculties, we negotiate directly with Minn State, and our negotiations occur every 2 years in correlation with the state appropriation. This structure has worked well for us. I'd like to remind people, in January of 2009, at the beginning of the Great Recession, and at the beginning of the legislative session, we were folks, and some of you may have been there, were preparing of how to deal with the devastating economy that came with that recession. It was the IFO at that time who proposed a status quo contract at our negotiating table that cemented a pay freeze. It lasted through that biennium and into the next biennium. Almost 4 years, our faculty took a pay freeze. And history has proven that decision by our negotiator was the right thing to do for our institutions, it was the right thing to do for our students, and it was absolutely the right thing to do for the state of Minnesota. Any analysis of our settlements since that 2009 contract would probably describe very modest salary increases, but we've negotiated many items that have helped our institutions and the students we serve. And that's been a collaborative effort with the negotiators at the system office as we've worked together to do what was best for our students. For the next biennium, the IFO is doing its part again. We have made a pledge to the chancellor that we would not seek a across the board salary increase in the fiscal year 22. And I would like to, since I have your attention, talk a little bit about the chancellor's challenge, which is to close all the equity gaps at all of our institutions by the year 2030. The fact is, related to other states, we do not have a good track record in delivering the promise of Minnesota for people of color. Our reputation as an education state is not reaching all communities. Minnesota is in the top five for the highest equity gaps in the country. But the upside, Minn State is strategically positioned to be a part of the solution. We educate and provide credentials for over half of all teachers in Minnesota. We educate and provide credentials for 60% of nurses and healthcare professionals in Minnesota. And we provide education credentials for many of the workforces necessary to make this state a great state to live in. We at the IFO, a union of faculty, we are committed to the Equity 2030 initiative that the chancellor has laid out. In doing so, we have created our own internal equity inclusion plan that we continue to work hard to address inequities, to address leadership issues around equity inclusion, and to create a culture of true inclusion. The obvious factor to this equation is hiring and retaining more faculty of color and of American Indian descent. I assure you, we are working collaboratively with the chancellor and his staff to push this effort forward. We are proud of the work and the collaboration that was expressed with Fond du Lac and the Winona State campus, where the education faculty deliver that teaching bachelor's degree on the Fond du Lac campus. So the chancellor's Equity 2030 initiative is a challenge. It's a challenge to all of us, faculty, staff, students, administrator, the chancellor's office, and our partners here in the legislature. So I just want to point out, I'm a proud product of the MIM State system. I started at Ember Hills Community College as a first generation student and a full Pell Grant qualifier. If it wasn't for the investment of the state at that time, paying 67% of my cost of the education and the financial aid that I was able to qualify for, I would not have had the opportunity to go to college. I earned my AA degree at Ember Hills. I transferred seamlessly to Bemidji State, where I finished my bachelor's degree and my master's degree. Upon completion of my master's degree, that community college hired me back as their football coach. From there, 32 years ago, I was fortunate enough to be offered a position at Southwest Minnesota State. So I've been in this system for over 40 years as a student, a coach, and a faculty member. You all have family members, neighbors, friends. You all know people who have benefited from the MIM State system. We should be proud of this system and the opportunities we provide for over 340,000 students annually. But one of the gifts that our generation can give to the current generation of students is to close these equity gaps. It has to be a commitment that my generation, which benefited from the investments in higher education, should be committed to giving back to the current generation of students. And Madam Chair, if I could, I would like to yield the rest of my time to Jonathan Bone, our Director of Public Relations and our lobbyist at the IFO.
Thank you, Mr. Jeffers. And what we're gonna do before we go on to Mr. Bone, I'm just gonna let members, I did get approval from House Information to go over about 10 minutes. And so we will Mr. Bone wrap up here and then move on to the next testifier from the Minnesota State College faculty, and then we will go to questions. Mr. Bone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll make this quick. So I wanted to highlight just the systems budget request for $75 million to our campuses is money that goes directly back into all of your communities. That's the money that's used to help keep tuition low, helps keep our universities and our state colleges accessible for everyone. And that's gonna be vital to protect the programs that we currently have and to invest in growing programs that meet the needs of all of our communities. And then a couple other things. The governor had proposed a COVID workforce stabilization grants. We think that's an excellent opportunity to provide resources to current students and to those displaced by the impacts of COVID as a way to bring them back into higher education and get the training or reskilling that they may need to move back into the workforce. And then the last thing I want to highlight is the direct admission program. As Brent talked about our commitment to Equity 2030, the direct admission program that the governor has proposed would allow an opportunity for students who may not have believed that college was in their future, an admittance letter, something on paper that tells them that college can be in their future. And not only can it be, but they're already admitted, and it would start the process of making sure that they understand what grants and other help is available for them to access college. And we just think that would be a great opportunity for the state to engage what has been traditionally marginalized communities in higher education. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Now we will move on to our next testifier, and we have the Vice President for Minnesota State College and Faculty that will speak next, and that is Matt Dempsey. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi, Vice Chair Christensen, Ranking Member O'Neill, and all the members of the committee. Definitely appreciate this opportunity to testify in front of you today and testify on behalf of the Minnesota State College faculty, or MSCF. As you heard, my name is Matt Dempsey. I'm the Vice President of MSCF. And if I weren't here today, weren't elected into that position, I'd be teaching mathematics in Bloomington at Armadale Community College. Would like to tell you just a little bit about MSCF and our values and you know what's important to us. The MSCF is the union that represents well over 4,000 full-time and part-time faculty, including teaching faculty, counselors, librarians on 39 two-year college campuses across the state from Moorhead to Winona and Windham to Duluth. So we cover the whole state like nobody else does it. And you'll find our instructors in an awful lot of different places. You'll find them in labs, even in this current pandemic, teaching students in person, doing things like automotive technology and welding and nursing and dental hygiene, and a lot of things that maybe you don't think of going on at a college per se. You may also find them outside teaching electrical line workers or in kitchens teaching culinary art students. And of course, you'll find many of us teaching in those traditional post-secondary disciplines like mathematics, English, history, music, theater, and more. Students come to two-year colleges for many, many reasons. Many of them will come just to learn a trade. They may be with us only for a few months. They can get a diploma or certificate and be out in the workforce very quickly. Others come as that stepping stone to a four-year bachelor's degree, and they might stay with us for 2 years or a little more. I do want to say, though, that with our counselors in particular, our focus really is on that whole student. We don't focus just on what's going on in the classroom. It really is so important what's going on around our students and the challenges that they have. It has such a huge impact on their ability to be successful in the classroom. And that runs from a range of issues. And so those problems have only been amplified during the pandemic. And we really strive to meet every student that comes to us, start with where they're at, and create for them a pathway into post-secondary education. Our institutions are, as you heard from the tribal and community colleges, open enrollment. Pretty much anyone that comes to us can find a course to take or something to do. And so we have great diversity coming in that way. And I think that really creates a very vibrant community on our campuses. So you'll see a great deal of diversity on our campuses in all sorts of different ways. As President Jeffers noted, first generation college students, we see an awful lot of them on our campuses, but also new immigrants. And we do see Native Americans, people of color, indigenous folks in high numbers on a campus, higher than you see in our surrounding communities. And that's because we're often the most accessible institutions for people, whether that's geographically or financially. And so that is one of the big benefits I think we provide here in the state. Our degrees and programs are often that first step or on-ramp to economic stability for whole families, if not individual students. And that benefits those people individually, but more importantly, it really does benefit our state as a whole. And that's why we really are in support of the many priorities that Minn State has brought forward for this legislative session. But it needs to be pointed out that our colleges, our students, and our faculty need that support, perhaps now with the pandemic and all the stress it's put on the system, even more than it has in recent memory. And so our students, they struggle with many different issues, starting with college debt and cost, to mental health, food insecurity, transportation, and more. And we want to try to help them with all of those issues so that they can be successful. Our faculty are also challenged. They've moved their classes online with the pandemic, but others can't do that. It's not really an option to teach welding through a system like this in Zoom. So they are on campuses teaching face-to-face classes, and they're worried about COVID and the risks that they're taking to do that, but they're there doing that work right now for our students. And our institutions are struggling as well. We struggle with all sorts of things. As President Jeffers said, equity is certainly a big issue that we have to work on. But our campuses have been forced to be more reliant on tuition. And that has really hurt, as we've seen enrollments change, particularly within the pandemic. And so we definitely need your support and help to keep those campuses strong and make sure that they're there to help when that economic recovery does come around, and we all hope that happens soon. Just to let you know, many of our faculty have scheduled meetings with legislators next week, hopefully with many of you. They certainly will have questions for their legislators, but if you have questions about individual campuses, they're definitely the experts to talk to, so hopefully you'll get to talk to them next week. To close, I'd just like to thank you again for the opportunity to tell you a little about the Minnesota State College faculty, our two-year colleges, and the students we teach. I'd like to yield a little bit of time to our government relations chair, Mark Grant. He has a few words, if that would be okay, Madam Chair.
Yes, welcome to the committee, Mark Grant.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Good afternoon, everyone. Chair Bernardi, Vice Chair Christensen, Ranking Member O'Neill, committee members. For the record, my name is Mark Grant. I'm a communication studies instructor at Dakota County Technical College, 22 years, but currently I help direct the governmental relations work on behalf of Minnesota State College faculty. I really appreciate Vice President Dempsey giving me, honestly, a minute of his time just to introduce myself to the committee and to voice MSCF support for Minnesota State's funding request. We are also really encouraged by the support higher ed received by the Walz-Flanagan administration demonstrated in their budget recommendation. The priorities identified in both the Minnesota State's ask and the governor's budget are shared by MSCF, and we believe they're critical to our campuses and our students. Whether it's campus support, which is going to help ensure the future of our technical and academic programs, the funds dedicated to addressing the mental health needs of our students, or the focus on mitigating the negative impacts that COVID has had on our students and on Minnesota's workforce over the last year, MSCF continues to believe that despite the real economic challenges of this landscape, we really believe that now is the time to invest in what we think is the backbone of Minnesota's economy, and that's a strong public higher education system. So I just wanted to take a couple of seconds and reinforce that, and then I will hop off and happy to take any questions if you have them.
Thank you. I see we have one question from our members, and then that is Representative Cleavorn. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This kind of builds on what we heard in the tribal presentation as well. Because your colleges and universities are spread out all over the state, I'm always concerned about retention of professors and instructors. And I'm wondering if you could tell me a little bit about your tenure process. How does an instructor become a tenured professor, and what does that look like in your system? And this is to Mr. Jeffers, please, President Jeffers.
President Jeffers.
Yes, Chair Bernardi, Representative Cleavorn, committee member. Thank you for that question. Our two contracts are different, the IFO and the MSCF. So I'm going to speak to the IFO contract, how our faculty receive tenure at the seven state universities. First of all, our faculty have to survive a national search. They're recognized with their credentials as experts in their field. And then I think one of the things that's important to understand about our tenure process, there is a five-year probationary period. And the faculty member makes application in the fifth year. So by the time they apply for tenure and any decision is made, they will be well into their 10th semester of teaching and being on the campus. There are annual reviews and feedback during that five-year probationary period that addresses the five criteria that we have for tenure. Those criteria include teaching effectiveness, scholarly and creative work. The third criteria is evidence of continuing preparation and study. The fourth criteria is contributions to student growth and development. And the fifth criteria is service to the university and community. So throughout the five-year probationary period, there's an annual input and evaluation process. And that input includes the department colleagues and the faculty member's direct supervisor, typically the academic dean of their college or department. In the fifth year, the applicant puts forward their documentation and their application for tenure. And the joke with faculty is it usually takes wagons or wheelbarrows to bring in the amount of documentation that's required to show the evidence over the past 5 years of everything that you've done related to those five criteria. Then the faculty in the department review that documentation, and the department faculty make a recommendation to the dean. The dean reviews the materials as well, reviews the recommendation from the department, and then the dean makes a recommendation to the provost. The provost reviews the documentation, the recommendations from the faculty and the dean, and the provost makes a recommendation to the president. The president of the university also reviews all the recommendations and the documentations that were submitted, and ultimately the president decides. It is a very thorough, extensive process, and it means something to get tenure. Not all faculty get tenure. It's not just a time requirement. 5 years in the position and you automatically are tenured going into your sixth year. That's not how it works for us. So it's an extensive process. I think it's a necessary process in the academy and in higher education. And it means something for longevity and investment in the university. And I always say this, there's no one more invested in the university than the faculty of that university. Thank you for that question.
Thank you. Representative Cleburne.
Thank you. I don't know if Mr. Dempsey would like to respond as well or if he has more to contribute.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Dempsey.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Cleburne. I'll just comment briefly. It's not the same process, but it is certainly very similar that the faculty at the two-year colleges assemble a great deal of documentation. We don't have a research component in our side of things, so it's focused almost exclusively on teaching and what we're doing in the classroom and what we're doing to improve what we do in the classroom. Our process is shorter. It's a three-year process as opposed to the 5 years that it is for the university faculty. And then we don't have a departmental review. It goes directly to the dean, vice president, or provost, and up to the president, and that's how it goes. The one thing I will say is that when you look at the tenured faculty, or what we call unlimited faculty, it is it does lag as far as the diversity and that sort of thing, and that's why one of our big focuses is keeping around many of our temporary faculty, and that's one of the difficult things. If you look at our numbers from a year ago, I think we were almost 4,700 people in our union at that point in time were covered by our contract. And this year we're at about 4,100. So we've lost about 600 faculty there that are not teaching for us. And of those that we have lost, a much higher percentage will be people of color and indigenous folks. And that does concern us because that is sort of the starting point place for many of our unlimited faculty that do come through. So we hate to see them lost.
Madam Speaker, really quickly, the Republican members are about 10 minutes late now getting to our caucus. So we need to get off now. Thank you.
We need to get, okay. If you'd like to get off, I will wrap it up. I have a comment to make. I don't see any other questions. I would like to just comment on what Mr. Dempsey said. He said like students come geographically and financially. And I just want to add one more reason. I was one of those students that came financially and geographically, and I stayed for the faculty. So I left about a year and a half into my education to the University of Minnesota, but I found in my first 2 years of classes, the teaching was much more intimate, and I like the environment better than my big auditoriums of 300 students. So anyway, I just wanted to add faculty is another reason why students go to two-year colleges. So I want to thank all of our members for being here today and our testifiers, and the meeting is adjourned.